Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York and Colorado Public Radio, this is Ask a Legal State, a national conversation about pot. I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC, along with Anne-Marie Awad from Colorado Public Radio, and host of their new podcast about legal cannabis called On Something. Today is April 20th, 420, which some of you know is a cannabis thing in pop culture. There are various stories that circulate for how the number 420 became associated with weed. One of the common ones that apparently has been debunked is that 420 is the police radio code for people smoking marijuana. The myth-busting website Snopes tells us 420 is not police radio code for anything, no less that. What it seems to actually be is that a group of high school students in San Rafael High School in Marin County in California, there, 420 simply being the time of day after school when they would meet to light up in 1971. And then it became a viral meme. However, viral memes spread in the days before the internet, and here we are. So this program is designed to connect people in legal weed states with people from states like mine, New York, as well as New Jersey, Illinois, and others that are actively considering it. Does the experience of legal states suggest this is a good idea? This is a journalistic conversation, not a 420 celebration. This hour, we'll talk first about changes in the culture of cannabis use in states that legalize, and then we'll have a six-party advice free-for-all with guests from four legal states, plus Anne-Marie in Colorado, telling me in non-legal New York and all of you listening in prohibitionist states around the country about the highs and lows of legal weed, public health, social justice, everything and anything, and the best and worst ways to legalize it if your state is going to do it. But first, cannabis culture in legal states. With me now, Lizzie Post, great-great-granddaughter of Emily Post, co-president of the Post Institute, and author of Higher Etiquette, A Guide to the World of Cannabis, From Dispensaries to Dinner Parties. And John Cagia, Chief Knowledge Officer at New Frontier Data. They have a report out called The Cannabis Consumer Report, Archetypes, Preferences, and Trends. Hi, Lizzie. Hi, John. Welcome to Ask a Legal State.
Hi. Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks very much.
And listeners, we invite your phone calls from people in legal states to tell the rest of the country something about the cannabis of the culture of cannabis and how it's changed once it became legal. Did you come out of the closet about your cannabis use for the first time to more people? Or did you find yourself interested in different strains for different kinds of highs that you didn't know existed? Have you had problems with other people maybe being not so discreet around your kids? Whatever it may be. And we can take calls from people in non-legal states as well, hence the name Ask a Legal State.
So, Lizzie, one thing you mentioned early in your book is simply the freedom to openly admit to other people that you use cannabis.
Sure.
Once it becomes legal. How much do you find that people do come out of the closet and suddenly surprise their friends and relatives and the colleague in the next cubicle about cannabis use once they're no longer breaking the law?
I think it certainly happens. I think especially those who have been waiting for it to be legalized to engage. I know a lot of people who are like that in Vermont. But it is definitely a moment, and it's interesting to watch people change how they talk about it. I know even in my own language, rather than saying, oh, well, you know, I still smoke pot, or oh yeah, I smoke pot every day in this kind of self-deprecating way, I'm much more comfortable saying, you know, I smoke cannabis and I love it, and this has been something really beneficial in my life. And that kind of confidence really changes the nature of the conversation that I'm having.
Speaking of staying in the closet, I want to go to John for a second. In the typology from your research, the nine types of cannabis consumers, several of those groups are defined partly by staying in the closet, like this group that you call the discreet unwinders. Who are they?
I'm so glad you asked, because they're one of my favorite groups within these nine archetypes that we identified. And as we were building these archetypes, what we're trying to do is, based on all of this data from our study, build profiles of people that were resonant to the characters that we were encountering across over the past 4.5 years that we've been analyzing the industry. And so the discrete unwinders are women who are generally more mature, have young children, have been consuming cannabis for a very long time. In fact, this group were amongst the earliest to start consuming cannabis before the age of 21. But very few people in their lives, either in their family lives or their professional lives, know that they consume cannabis. They tend to use it for relaxation. And the image that our team envisioned as we're building this archetype is of a tired mother with two children and a dog who's in the tub with the bathroom window open, smoking a joint, having a vape, with the kids banging on the door and the dog barking and just trying to get a moment's peace. Cannabis has been really important in their relaxation, but they've been very, very discreet about their use.
Okay, so what happens to mom when pot becomes legal?
It's an open question, because once it becomes legal, the question is whether they will at that point be comfortable coming out to their friends about something that has been a long narrative in their lives that these people in their lives knew nothing about. It is going to happen. I think Emily put it perfectly, that we are seeing this shift and it's happening quite quickly. But with older consumers in particular, they've been a little more reticent to come out in public, particularly those who live in very, very conservative communities.
And listeners, again, our call in for this segment is about the changing culture of cannabis once it becomes legal. 212-433-WNYC, from your experience in a legal state, or with a question from a non-legal state for people from legal states. Sorry, I just gave the wrong phone number. The right phone number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255. Or you can tweet a question. Just use the hashtag #WeedToKnow, #WeedToKnow, if you want to tweet a question for Lizzie Post and John Cagilla. Lizzie, on the etiquette side, one of the things you warn people in legal states to avoid is cannabis culture smugness.
Yes.
So who imposes that on other people, and how do they tend to show it?
Oh, it comes in all kinds of forms, but it comes in the forms of, I know how to grow better than you. The stuff I smoke or consume or use or make my product with is better than yours. And to some degree, I mean, you know, entrepreneurs are out there to say my product is the product or one of the great products. But, you know, when you're talking with your friends, especially in a state like mine that's a homegrown state, people have all kinds of different strategies for growing and what works for them and why they choose the cultivars that they choose. And there can be a tendency for the conversation to get very arrogant and very dominated by that personality of, I'm right, you're wrong. And so we try in etiquette to avoid that. and so it's considerate to not take that kind of attitude with it.
And on the other hand, you warn people from non-legal states who visit legal states not to assume everything is a cannabis free-for-all there.
Right.
So what are some common mistakes people make on that?
You can't go to Colorado and just walk down the street and smoke a joint or smoke a bowl in the park. Or
Yeah, please don't.
You're not supposed... Yeah, please correct me if I'm wrong on any of these. But
no, you are absolutely correct.
Public
you are not supposed to just smoke weed anywhere.
It's not there yet. And so you do want to respectfully ask, you know, where are the ways I can engage with this? Because as a tourist, unless you have a private residence or a place that's allowed to have consumption on site, which there are very, very few, it could be really confusing going out for a weedcation and like not feeling like you actually get to engage with the plant.
In fact, Anne-Marie, in New York, it seems like people are smoking in public all the time and everywhere.
Just smell it everywhere.
I remember that about living in New York, yes.
But what people have started to say is when pot became legal in Colorado, everybody started smoking it openly in New York. But what I've also heard, and not being in Colorado, please tell me what's true, that in Colorado and other legal states, there's actually not that much smoking in public.
Right.
I don't see it that much. I mean, I live in downtown Denver and I commute by foot and by transit a lot, and I just don't see it a ton. I will tell you that I get off the bus at like 6 some days and I smell it wafting out of people's windows, but that's not illegal.
Yeah.
That's different than on every street corner.
Right,
Stu,
yeah.
In Salt Lake City, you're on Ask a Legal State. Hi, Stu.
Hi, how's it going? Hey, a couple years ago, I had a opportunity to sit down with the police chief from Breckenridge, Colorado.
Oh, cool.
And we were chatting about the marijuana tourism and some of the changes that they had seen in the last couple of years since decriminalization. And a couple of things that she pointed out that were really interesting was that they'd seen a decrease in violent crime, a decrease in domestic violence, and then their tax revenue, because they tax marijuana there, was helping fund, I believe, their school systems, which was really interesting. But she did say one of the downsides was that a lot of people would come to Breckenridge, buy a huge amount of way more marijuana than they could actually consume because they just had no concept of how much they could actually use. Mm-hmm. And then very quickly realized that they'd bought too much and then leave, you know, candy bars and things like that for, because they couldn't fly home with them. So they would kind of leave them as a tip for the, housekeeping folks.
That's pretty funny. And I'm going to jump in for time, Stu, but I wonder if that figures into, Lizzie Post, your marijuana etiquette book at all.
You got it.
leaving tips for the chambermaids after your marijuana
yes.
tourism vacation in the form of joints and edibles?
I worked with Doc's house in Oregon. It's a bed and breakfast. And we talked about that. And he said, you know, the normal tips for housekeeping are still welcome. But they said, you know, we also really do appreciate it when people leave some of the product, leave what they can. They certainly know people can't bring it with them. And so they'd rather have them, you know, give it to a good source. But it does become permanent. I would not do it in lieu of a cash tip. I think you still want to make sure that you're holding up kind of that end of the social contract of travel.
When we come back from a break, you both go into different types of cannabis experiences and different types of strains. Like some strains are sold as providing more of an energetic or euphoric or creative high. Others are sold as being more for relaxation. And John, when we come back, I'm going to ask you first if your research into consumer patterns tells us that different types of people use for different reasons along that spectrum. So stay with us and get ready to answer that question as Ask a Legal State continues in a minute.
Call my friends and tell them there's a party, come on by. Now just roll me up and smoke me when I die. Roll me up and smoke me when I die. And if anyone...
From WNYC in New York and Colorado Public Radio, this is Ask a Legal State, a national conversation about pot. I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC, along with Anne-Marie Awad from Colorado Public Radio. And our guests at the moment, as we talk about the change in culture of cannabis use in states that have legalized, are Lizzie Post, author of Higher Etiquette, A Guide to the World of Cannabis from Dispensaries to Dinner Parties, and John Cagia, Chief Knowledge Officer at New Frontier Data, which has released a cannabis consumer report on archetypes, preferences, and trends. So let me restate the question that I was framing before the break. John, different kinds of strains, some sold as providing more of an energetic or euphoric or creative high, others sold as being more for relaxation. And I wonder if your research into different types of cannabis users in both kinds of states tells us that different types of people use for different reasons along that spectrum.
Absolutely. And this idea of choosing your own adventure or choosing your own experience based on the type of cannabis the consumer uses is part of the reason why the industry is growing so quickly and why people are starting to integrate cannabis into their lives in so many new and different ways. Historically, before we had all of this recent advances in understanding the science of cannabis, we broadly understood that there seemed to be some strains that, as you said, give you more energy, make you more energetic, whereas others tend to be much more relaxing, much more conducive to getting you to sleep and keeping you asleep, and a whole range of variants in between. With now over 5,000 to 7,000 different distinct genetics out there, the industry is being able to formulate these cannabis products, grow these cannabis strains to produce very specific effects. And since we know cannabis consumers don't just consume either medically treating cannabis as a pharmaceutical or recreational in the social use sense of the word, from our survey we know that actually the main reason why people consume cannabis is for relaxation. But second to that, at 59%, is stress relief, anxiety reduction, improving sleep quality, pain management, falling asleep. And for all of these different reasons, different types of products are well suited. So as consumers increasingly find a product that works for the specific outcome that they're looking for, they're integrating cannabis in that way. But it also means that there's a lot more and a much richer diversity of products on the market, and a lot more different avenues by which consumers can now engage with and interact with the plant.
Lizzie, you give social etiquette advice for people in legal states who have these open parties, where maybe some of these users are, where they put out weed like others put out alcohol. Mm-hmm. And one of your chapters is called I Doobie Doo, Weed and Weddings.
Yes.
So can you please share some of the doobie do's and doobie don'ts in that situation?
Well, when it comes to cannabis weddings, more so, it's just to start really preparing. We do a lot of wedding guest etiquette at the Emily Post Institute, and preparing people that when they do travel to states, of which, I believe there are 10, where you can interact with cannabis in this type of setting, a lot of couples who love cannabis want it to be a part of their day. I mean, I've been to many a wedding where, everyone's really excited about the person who decided to bring the joint, And it's really nice to see people be able to open up and share that. But it's also really important to do it intentionally and to do it with thought for your guests. You don't have to promote it to all of your guests. It doesn't have to be 100% theme threaded throughout the entire wedding, unless that's your thing, in which case, go for it. But yeah, that's the weed at weddings is really, it's quite a big deal. I mean, there's whole wedding cannabis expo.
Did you go ahead. Sorry.
No, go
I'm
ahead.
Just really curious if you had been to a weed wedding for the book.
I haven't. It just happens to be that I have been to a lot of weddings where there is just weed around, but I have not gotten the wonderful experience of going to a wedding where there's actually a bud bar and, take home cannabis and it's like, 'cause you have little gifts that you give to the guests, there's welcome baskets in hotel rooms. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to incorporate this, both as an educational experience for people who are traveling to your state and don't live there, but also just as an enjoyment experience.
Though I imagine part of the etiquette would be to take into account if people with small children are coming, or even teenagers for that matter, and what and in what ways
Absolutely.
You want to expose them.
Absolutely. And it is important to give people a heads up that you are going to have a full area that's cannabis friendly. You want to reassure parents that their kids aren't going to be able to get into this if there are kids at the wedding, or you choose to have an adult only wedding. There are lots of ways to work around it, but you really want to think about who your guests are, what you want their experience to be, and how best you can make all your guests comfortable. You don't want the smoking zone to be upwind of the non-smoking zone so that's smoke is just blowing all over the people who don't want to be on it.
Sierra in Ponca City, Oklahoma. You're on Ask a Legal State. Hi, Sierra.
Hi. Basically, when I was talking earlier, I was saying that in Oklahoma is where I live now, but I was living in Colorado, and I think whenever they legalize it medically here, I think there was a larger range of people still getting the same products, but obviously not legally or legally. And the culture here, because it's just medical, has made it closer to everyone being able to get a hold of things, just like Colorado. So, and I was living there and they had everything from a selection of like drinks and oils and all sorts of stuff. And now that it's medical here, everybody is still doing basically the same thing. It's just like more on I have a card and you might not.
Yeah, and that confirms some other things that I've heard about Oklahoma. John, I don't know if you want to jump in on this, but there are states with medical only legal cannabis that are more restrictive, like where I live in New York and New Jersey. It's pretty hard to get a medical marijuana card, and you really have to have one of a particular few conditions. And there aren't many dispensaries. Or there are states like California where it was so loosey-goosey when it was medical. Now it's recreational too. And Oklahoma seems to be one of those loosey-goosey California-style states.
That's absolutely right. So based on the data we've collected over the past few years, we've seen that the types of state regulations have a huge impact on the growth of the medical cannabis programs. So as you said, California is at one end of the spectrum where basically anyone could get a cannabis recommendation for any condition with very, very little regulation and oversight of that by the state, whereas you have states like New Jersey where it's a really onerous process, it's a costly process, and it's a market that has limited access. Oklahoma, I would just make the distinction from California, actually does have a fairly robust regulation in place, but one of the differences in Oklahoma relative to some of the other markets is the number of qualifying conditions that they've approved to participate in the medical cannabis program. So because doctors have a lot of latitude to recommend cannabis, the patients are able to get cannabis, are able to use cannabis for a much broader range of conditions, which means that barriers to participation are much, much lower than they would be in a place like New Jersey.
Isaac in Queens, you're on Ask a Legal State. Hi, Isaac.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm really appreciating the conversation. My question is more in a broad question about tolerance in terms of smoking marijuana and both in terms of cultural effects and then obviously safety effects as well in terms of people that are regular smokers will know that their tolerance for how much weed they smoke can really vary from that of a first-time smoker and both how that affects, you know, public culture as well as public safety.
John, let me go back to you on this because your consumer survey also looked, I see, for how people are consuming cannabis in legal versus non-legal states. And I wonder if you have a particular answer to Isaac's question. I also wonder if your research tells us that smoking is becoming a thing of the past, being replaced by vaping or by edibles or dabbing in legal states.
So there are two parts to that, and maybe the latter question first. The product landscape for cannabis is evolving extraordinarily quickly. So we looked at national sales data for cannabis consumer products in legal markets, and we've seen just over the past 3.5 years, the share of flower has gone from the majority of product that's consumed, so flower being joints and what you would smoke in a pipe, to these value-added products, particularly the vapes, the concentrates, the edibles, the topicals. They've grown to nearly 50% of the market just in that short period. So the options that consumers now have access to and has grown dramatically. And that's obviously influencing consumer behaviors and influencing this question of tolerance. The issue of tolerance is one which we think there needs to be a lot more education around, particularly because there are so many first-time cannabis consumers who are now engaging with the legal markets, like exploring the potential for cannabis. Making sure that they have a clear guidance on dosing, on appropriate use, on how long to wait between consumption, et cetera, is really important because just as we would not have somebody first time drinking alcohol drink, you know, half a bottle of whiskey, it's really important that first time cannabis consumers have a graduated process because over consuming cannabis is never a good process. It's not going to kill you, but it's not a good ride, and it's an experience that is eminently avoidable if there's the right resources channel toward education to make sure consumers are aware of what they're getting into.
I want to thank our guests for this segment, John Kaguya, Chief Knowledge Officer at New Frontier Data, which has released a cannabis consumer report on archetypes, preferences, and trends, and Lizzie Post, author of Higher Etiquette, a guide to the world of cannabis from dispensaries to dinner parties. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.